Motivation. During part of my career, I was the principal of St. Paul Open School, a kindergarten through grade 12 experimental school with no required courses. One day, a parent came to see me about withdrawing her fourth grade daughter, explaining that while she loved the school, no one could convince her daughter to study arithmetic, and she would need that for her future. Though I regretted the girl's leaving, I wished her well. When I ran into the mother some months later, I asked about her daughter's progress in the conventional school she had transferred to. The mother said that she was puzzled because her daughter caught up with the other students in a matter of weeks, despite having little or no math for several years at my school. I've had numerous similar experiences. One was a student who decided as a 15-year-old that algebra was going to be important for his future college work. He tackled an algebra textbook and completed a year of algebra in a month, with minimal teacher guidance. Daniel Greenberg, co-founder of Sudbury Valley School in Framingham, Massachusetts, an experimental school with no required subjects or classes, tells the story of a dozen 9 to 12-year-old boys and girls who approached him about learning arithmetic, which they had not studied before. After obtaining assurances from the learners that they would attend his twice-weekly, 30-minute math class without fail, he proceeded to teach addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, fractions, and decimals. The students attained these competencies in 20 hours. Such is the power of personal motivation on the brain, starting from infancy. Those types of experiences caused me to wonder about the pace of learning in traditional subjects. I think it is torturously slow because most students don't see the relevance to their lives, hence, personal motivation and drive are missing. As psychologists and researchers have said for years, intrinsic motivation leads to powerful sustained learning compared to extrinsic motivation based on predetermined subjects from the teacher, report cards, or other factors outside the learner. Dan Pink references this research, stating, "If you truly want to engage kids, you have to pull back on control and create the conditions tapping into inner motivations." Another clue to faster learning comes from the work of Paulo Freire with illiterate adults in remote villages in Brazil. He and his colleagues taught adults to read, or should I say, they learned to read, in 30 hours. They used words of great meaning to their lives, such as water, sanitation, children, disease, and elders. Quickly, the adults discerned patterns and applied them to other words. The people behind new models of schooling understand the need for change and cite reforms underway in Brazil, Sweden, Finland, South Korea, Kenya, and U.S. locations. The crux is how to accomplish transformation. Fixing a conventional system that resists change because of a deeply embedded paradigm requires establishing parallel competing schools, both within public districts and outside the system, and offering parents a choice in both instances. Some children face overwhelming conditions, often from dysfunctional homes that affect their well-being and school performance. Despite harsh conditions, referred to as adverse childhood experiences or ACE, some children display self-determination and self-efficacy. Researchers studied this aspect of children and youth to shed light on how some youth persevere, even in devastatingly severe circumstances. While participating on the New York City Reading Study, I visited Public School 192 in East Harlem, an elementary school serving children from low-income families. As part of an auxiliary reading program, a child was asked about favorite events or interesting items. The child might say, "hippopotamus" after a visit to a zoo. The teacher wrote that word on an index card. More words were added based on the child's experiences, each on a separate card: cat, mother, Diane, sister, spaghetti, etc. The words were chosen by the child, and new ones were added until there was a thick packet. Every day, the teacher or volunteer held up the cards one by one. In a few days, the children recognized their words. I was astonished as young children proudly showed and recited their loose leaf rings of words. It was obvious that they loved words. Like the adults in the previous example, children absorbed patterns from their favorite words and, in time, extended the patterns to other words. This was one of 20 activities using the natural curiosity of children and their drive to gain skills. The reading consultant at the school, Rita Champion, in answer to my question about how reading was taught, said, "Wrong question. We don't teach reading as an isolated and separate subject. Rather, the children live reading and writing all day." I spoke with Julia Reed Palmer, director of the then-American Reading Council. She told me that the school system was so wedded to conventional books and procedures that the program at Public School 192 ended with the Back to the Basics movement despite its success. The reading program at Public School 192 built on concepts from such individuals as Sylvia Ashton Warner, a New Zealand reading teacher working with Maori children, and Frank Smith of the Ontario Institute for Studies and Education. Smith, a well-regarded researcher in reading and learning, said, "We learn how effortlessly children learn to talk and that learning to read can be just as pleasurable provided adults facilitate rather than obstruct." A brief list of how initial reading can unfold in a natural way comes from self-design. Child notices written words on signs, billboards, magazines. Child asks parents, "What does this say?" Parent models reading, pretending to read to stuffed animals and younger siblings. Child chimes in on familiar parts of stories. Child understands that sounds go with letters. Child likes to play with sounds and enjoys creating silly words. Child can predict the ends of sentences in books that are being read to him or her. Child knows when something read doesn't make sense. Child can look from left to right on pages. Child recognizes his or her name and names of family members. Campbell Lowmore described an example of learning to read by extremely troubled youth. Boys aged 8 to 16 had to set up temporary camps in the woods while working out problems of arranging shelters, food, survival, collaborating, and interacting with difficult personalities, all in residencies averaging 18 months. Lowmore, the founder, wrote that the boys were far behind in academics, and staff pondered hiring a reading teacher. Meanwhile, a boy might discover a snake and would be helped to write an article for the camp newsletter. The boy would read it over and over and proudly send it to his parents. After that, the boy developed improved reading skills under natural circumstances of interest and motivation. No reading teacher was hired. The process didn't work perfectly, but it probably worked better than usual schooling. Remember, the mostly failing boys had already been in schools with processes for learning to read, special education programs, and other interventions. I realize that children and adults learn differently and that reading programs are a subject of debate. I don't believe that so many children would have reading problems if we paid attention to maturation and national interest. Or that so many children would be diagnosed, labeled, and drugged. Certainly, conventional approaches leave much to be desired for results and positive self-regarding attitudes. Powerful learnings also occur from community experiences. Field trips to farms, aviaries, and behind the scenes in grocery stores, community service projects, internships, jobs, volunteering, and visiting government agencies in all their complexity fascinate children. Some teachers report that children are unruly and consider the field trip a way to get out of school lessons. Rather than abandon field trips, consider the lessons, teachers report that planned field trips introduce children to new words and concepts and accelerate learning, but school budgets only support a few trips. Trips and other experiences must fit the child's maturity, though what children and youth can understand is often underestimated. Remember, infants, constantly faced with challenges far above their maturity levels, figure out patterns of language and concepts. Experiential encounters, if tailored to interests or potential interests of children, show the brain in action, learning from complexity. The brain's high alert status uses maximum input to build understanding. Though information to the brain is initially flawed, with more exposure, concepts become increasingly accurate, a feature of the brain's powers of self-correction. Lynn Lush argues for more learning outside the classroom because of its limited resources and narrow scope. He says the age grade pattern of schooling, same age children in the same grade, ignores huge differences among students. Outside experiences awaken the brain's powers from the dry as a bone daily sameness where children are mostly sitting at a time when the body aches for movement. Lesh cites children and adults learning faster and more deeply from community-based activities. When an elder dies, a library closes. African proverb. Children have many interests and questions, but schools ignore them for a set curriculum. The school says, in effect, we're not interested in your little questions, we've got more important things to do. This has an unfortunate impact, probably at the unconscious level. Many have suspected that schooling reduces curiosity, creativity, and self-efficacy. Howard Adelman and Linda Taylor, longtime advocates for greater learning results, urge attention to mental health factors, integrating social and educational services, and using modern principles of learning. I recommend familiarity with their focused, free, and useful materials from the University of California at Los Angeles School Mental Health Project and Center for Mental Health in Schools, in addition to their readable, practical, pertinent, referenced books.